Why do certain myths persist? The indolence myth. Have you heard of that? It's the idea that Aboriginal people are inherently lazy. It's been around for a long time, since the time of William Dampier. Certain racist myths hang on grimly for dear life, and that's because they suit a certain agenda. And the indolence myth justifies a kind of manifest destiny, a belief that those who exploit the land are entitled to it, even if they steal it. And you can see how this myth of indolence perpetuates itself. It doesn't need much to keep going. Media historian Dr. Liz Connor is interested in how myths about Aboriginal people in particular are produced and reproduced in visual texts across time. Now, Liz Connor was in Hawaii when she discovered something quite unexpected, which harks back to the very moment that Europeans first devised this particular myth of indolence.
And I was looking through, quite randomly, books that were categorised under exploration and discovery. These are loaded terms, of course, because people who live there aren't exploring and discovering, so it has kind of terra nullius a little bit inbuilt into those terms. But I was looking through that category of rare books anyway to see if there were any there that had Australian content, and I came across a Dutch edition of William Dampier's New Voyage Round the World, which is an account of his first circumnavigation. There were three. And it came out in English in 1697. And this Dutch edition came out in 1698. And it's illustrated. And in that Dutch edition, I found an image of, as it transpires, Badijawi people up on the peninsula that now bears Dampier's name, the Dampier Peninsula above Broome. And as far as I can ascertain, it's the earliest printed European image of Aboriginal Australians.
I'm interested in the history of representation as it relates to Aboriginal people. So this is an important moment in terms of our graphic history, in terms of the history of representation.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think it's quite descriptive the way this image was drawn from textual description rather than from direct observation. So this particular engraver, he's based in Amsterdam. It's not likely he will have encountered many so-called native or savage peoples at that point. He may have encountered quite a few Africans because of slavery and the kind of predominance of slavery throughout Europe. But he nevertheless didn't have a lot to go from in terms of from this text trying to visualise a people who he'd never seen. And so he really had to rely on the text, and it's very interesting what he's come up with because the facial rendering is quite European and he's really focused, I think, on the narrative of the scene, if you like. It's a real vignette, so you have this kind of series of events playing out in this particular engraving.
Now, there are multiple narratives in this image. There are various scenes. In the foreground, we have an attempt to take an Aboriginal person, a Badi or Jawi person, as we understand it. What's happening in that foreground, in the very front of that image?
In the front, in the foreground, the focus, you know, of the eye is taken to or directed to a group of New Hollanders, and some of them have been dressed in ragged English clothes, cast-offs, in exchange for the English attempting to extract labour from them, namely placing barrels on their shoulders and asking them to, or directing them to, carry the barrels onto a canoe that would then go out to the Cygnet, which was the ship that Dampier crewed. And what we see is the New Hollanders looking variously, there's a group of them, variously insolent, confused, and bemused.
Yeah, they're not too impressed. It would appear to be, if we look at it in kind of very broad terms, an attempt to enslave. Basically, what is happening is, you'll do this for us. You'll carry these
Yeah.
These barrels, I think, full of water, presumably.
Yeah, that's right. Water. So, and the water will have come from their sink, the sink of the Badijawi and other water sources that they were very generously making available to the English, which they didn't have to. It's not part of their riparian rights necessarily to just hand this water over. So in a way, something's already been exchanged there, but the English just have no literacy around this. None of this is legible to them in any way. So they don't get that they're already having a number of favours extended to them in that, insofar as they're also capturing turtle and cooking them and fish. Yeah, they've been led, they've been shown presumably a water sink or source, but they don't get that. They think it's all there for the taking.
Yeah, it's so interesting, this kind of, I guess it is another first contact.
Yeah, moment. And like so many first contacts, it's just there are two groups of people who are, you know, variously offended, bemused, alarmed, aggressive, a whole range of the full gamut of human response to the strange and the new happens repeatedly in these first contact scenarios, like the French, the Baudin expedition to Van Diemen's Land and Cook at Botany Bay. Over and over we see these encounters eliciting very strange responses, and this is another illustrated instance of that.
In his description of these events, let's call it an encounter. Mm. He says they stood like statues without motion. For these poor creatures seem not accustomed to carry burdens.
I know. That sounds like a bad life. Or other people's burdens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think as Michael McCarthy, who led the Roebuck, which was Dampier's next ship when he came back in 1699. Michael McCarthy over at the Maritime Museum in Perth led the archaeology on the wreck of the Roebuck. And as he says, what you're really seeing, he thinks, and what is being described also is the Aboriginal people having a laugh at the Europeans. They quite possibly just thought it was completely absurd and ridiculous. You know, a number of things about it. Why would they be thinking that Aboriginal people who are accustomed to being largely unclothed would want to wear woolen, you know, worsted jackets in high summer above Broome, for example? Why were the English, why were these, you know, these people, these strange people carrying and storing water? For most, you know, Aboriginal people, they don't carry water because they know where it is and they know how to get it without too much difficulty. All kinds of things would have just been amusing potentially to them, and not the least the expectation that they would carry their burdens for them when they were perfectly fit and capable men of carrying their own burdens. So what was this exchange about, that you give people things that are of no value to you, assuming they're of value to the New Hollanders, when they weren't, in order to get them to do labour that they're perfectly capable of doing themselves? So that, which is kind of surplus value labour or capitalism, you know, may have seemed like a very bizarre way of going about things to these people, and quite possibly funny and ridiculous and laughable.
I mean, they aren't accurate images because they are drawn from the text, and, you know, as we say, like the engraver did not see these events.
Yeah.
He's not describing something he saw, rather interpreting it from Dampier's words. But Dampier is interesting because his observations in the, as I say, 17th and mostly the 18th century, in his journeys along the west coast, they still resonate. Why do you think Dampier really inscribes the narrative, really sets all the tropes, sets a number of them, which have never been
challenged. Yeah. So in the book I wrote about racism against Aboriginal women and all of the tropes that go around that, it's called Skin Deep, I do a tracery of this passage. So I was aware of it. So as soon as I saw it, I recognised it. I do a tracery of this passage through other history books and newspapers right up until the 1950s. And that passage was reproduced uncritically something like 30 times. So it was extremely influential. But then going further back, we see that what Shino Kanishi, a scholar in Aboriginal history, has identified as the myth of Aboriginal male indolence. And she traces that trope through Enlightenment thinking, which comes after Dampier. But these thinkers were very, very influenced by Dampier. And so she looks at people like John Locke and his notion of, you know, cultivating the soil being the grounds for possessing the soil or land. And then she looks at Montesquieu and his attitudes about warmer climates and people being in warmer climates being less inventive because life is easier for them. They don't have to protect against the weather. You know, there's breadfruit and fish and things are more available to them, so they're less inventive and therefore less intelligent. So that idea was profoundly influential through Enlightenment thinking, and it became really key or foundational to, you know, discerning or demarking racial difference prior to the biological basis of racial difference and Darwin and the way and that leading into scientific racism. So yeah, you can see just how profound this description by Dampier was and where it went and the influence that it had and continues arguably to have right up into the policy around the Northern Territory intervention and other sorts of, you know, current conservative government policies. Mm.
And also just the visual representation of Aboriginal people. He famously said, the inhabitants of this country are the miserablest people in the world.
Yeah. Well, he actually got that from an earlier Dutch traveller who had come to the Gulf of Carpentaria in 1623. And said that they were the poorest and miserablest people in the world. And he also noted they had no knowledge of precious metals or spices. So what these guys from the VOC, or the Dutch East Indies Company, which was established in 1602, the first of which came to the west coast of Australia in 1606, and the Dutch were up and down that coast like a rash throughout the 17th century, but they were scoping like Dampier, and they were looking for spices, metals, obviously gold, but they were also looking at the inhabitants and how they could extract labour from them.
Just looking, I mean, you spend your time, you know, looking at these representations and considering them in their context historically and looking for the resonances and how they tell us things about the way things are now. But why do you think Dampier's observations more than Cook's? Because Cook said some very interesting things which seem to, in my view, contradict Dampier quite starkly.
Yeah, but, I think you're right.
You know, certainly you can still see how Dampier's observations persist.
Persist, that's right. It is really interesting because, I mean, there are many incarnations of the trope of male Aboriginal indolence, as Shino Kanishi shows. And we might see, you know, a shift in racial thinking around Cook's time to the noble savage. He certainly came here, and so did the French, very much influenced by Diderot. And they were labouring under that set of suppositions about native peoples. And in that instance, it's about living in harmony with nature and having less hierarchical, you know, systems of governance and a much more sort of romanticised, idealised notion of native ways of being. And that's kind of in reaction to the inception of modernity, industrialisation and the sort of fears about people not being close to nature anymore and the repercussions of that. So even though there were these quite different ways of thinking, it's very interesting, isn't it, the way a trope like this just persists. And I guess it had to be very convenient. So even though Cook was thinking within terms of the noble savage, that didn't turn his mind away from the trope of indolence because it was very convenient to the notion that the English and Europeans cultivated the soil and therefore they had a claim over it because Aboriginal people, as far as they could tell, and they really just wanted to not see a whole bunch of stuff that was right under their noses, as Bruce Pascoe's work has shown, they didn't want to see stuff because they needed to maintain the idea that they were really just living hand to mouth. They didn't cultivate the soil. So even if they had a prior claim to it as inhabitants, they weren't going to do enough with it that justified them keeping it and the English respecting their sovereignty in terms of the colonial project of dispossession. And that was really pinned to this notion that native peoples didn't cultivate and therefore they didn't really have as good a claim in terms of, you know, religious ideas even or Christian ideas. They didn't have as good a claim to the land as these newcomers did.
Dr. Liz Connor, Senior Research Fellow in History at La Trobe University in Melbourne. Her book, Skin Deep, about historical representations of Aboriginal women, is awesome. You should check it out. And you can see the image that we've been talking about on our website. Now, it's a Dutch engraving from the late 17th century based on a text by the English buccaneer William Dampier.